Today is Tuesday. It is May 4th. The year is 2021. I'm Jim McPherson, and I'll be reading from the front pages of the Hartford Courant and the New York Times. Starting with a review of the photographs on the front pages of these two newspapers, the Hartford Courant first, where above the fold at the very top we have two small pictures of two clergymen. The headline for this story says, "Clergy urge no legal marijuana." And the caption tells us that these are photographs of Archbishop Leonard B. Blair, left, of the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Hartford, and Leroy Bailey, Jr., of the First Cathedral in Bloomfield. They are among faith leaders urging the legislature to reject legalizing marijuana. Below that, and just above the fold, is a large photograph showing a man who's holding a large cylinder as he walks away from a group of other men with large cylinders in the background. The caption tells us that this is a man who walks carrying a refilled cylinder as family members of COVID-19 patients wait in line to refill their oxygen cylinders in the Maripuri district of New Delhi on Monday. And then at the very bottom of the page, we have a picture of the Warner Theater. "Warner cancels play after backlash," is the headline for this story. The caption reads, "The Warner Theater in Torrington has canceled a production of the drama I Am My Own Wife due to complaints that the one-person multi-character drama had not been cast with a transgender actor." Those are the photos on the front page of the Hartford Courant. Now, let us turn our attention to the front page of the New York Times. And here, across four of the six columns, we have a large color photograph of a soldier who is sitting on a tailgate assembly of some sort of an aircraft that appears to be airborne. And he's overlooking a large metropolitan city that flows into a mountainous region. Farther away, there's another aircraft that's airborne. It's a helicopter flying. And the caption tells us that this is dismantling 20 years of war. A U.S. soldier over Kabul, Afghanistan. Troops are raising American bases countrywide to meet the September 11th pullout date. And then over on the right, we have a small photograph of people who are walking on the sidewalk outside a store. "New York hopes to lure summer tourists with a reopening," is the caption here. And lower yet, we have another picture of oxygen cylinders with people handling them. "A critical shortage in India," is the caption. "Workers unloading tanks in Delhi, India. At least 10 people and possibly as many as 24 died after another hospital in India ran out of the increasingly precious resource, medical oxygen." And that takes us to the lead story in the New York Times. It runs under the headline, "New York Region to Accelerate Reopening, Raising Hopes and Anxiety." The subhead, "New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut are pushing ahead with May 19th reopening plans, and the subway will return to 24-hour service." This article is by Winnie Hugh and Luis Ferry Soderni. New York and its neighbors, New Jersey and Connecticut, announced on Monday that they were lifting almost all their pandemic restrictions, paving the way for a return to fuller offices and restaurants, a more vibrant nightlife, and a richer array of cultural and religious gatherings for the first time in a year. The relaxation of rules starting May 19th is a testament to the fact that coronavirus cases are down and vaccination rates are rising, offering a chance to jumpstart the recovery in a region that became a center of the global pandemic last spring. New York will also bring back 24-hour service to the subway on May 17th after a year of overnight closures, a move critical for night shift workers and a symbolic boost to a city that takes pride in a transit system that had, until the pandemic, never closed for extended periods. Quote, "Today is a milestone for New York State and a significant moment of transition," unquote, said Governor Andrew M. Cuomo, who made the announcement in tandem with the governors of two other states, reflecting how the region has tried to coordinate its response to the public health emergency. Mr. Cuomo, in announcing the sweeping changes, sought to accelerate New York's rebound and coax back workers and tourists vital to the city's economy and its dynamism. Last week, Mayor Bill de Blasio set a goal of July 1st for fully reopening the city. But public health experts warned that the officials might be taking too big a risk in opening so widely so soon, given the lagging rates of vaccination among some age groups and in certain parts of the city, and the spread of more contagious variants. NYC and Company, the city's tourism promotion agency, however, lost no time in spreading the word of the loosening restrictions. Quote, "We are open for business and the city is reawakening," unquote, said Chris Haywood, an agency spokesman. Quoting again, "The summer holds considerable promise for us. People are clamoring to make up for a year of lost vacation time," unquote. As the three states made their announcement, there were other signs that the nation was turning the corner in the fight against COVID-19. Significantly, the Food and Drug Administration was said to be moving toward authorizing the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for children 12 to 15 years old by week end. For many business owners, especially in the hospitality industry, news of the reopening was a lifeline. Dwayne Winter, the owner of Savvy Bistro and Bar in Brooklyn, said the announcement was just the, quote, green light, unquote, that many New Yorkers have been waiting for to get back to their lives. Quote, "People are looking for a reason to come back," unquote, said Mr. Winter, 37, who said that many of his customers and workers miss socializing, sitting together at the bar, and pouring their hearts out. Quote, "It's not just serving food or drinks. It's about really becoming a friend to the community and a confidant," unquote. Still, immediately restarting operations might not make practical or economic sense for some businesses, such as Broadway theaters. Some people in the arts world said that they were surprised by Mr. Cuomo's announcement, and the Broadway League said theatrical performances were still not likely to resume until September. And many companies have said they are not bringing back many of their employees until September and are making at least some remote work a permanent feature. After becoming one of the first places in the country to impose extensive lockdowns, New York is following states in the South and parts of the West that have already moved to reopen. But in many of the nation's other major cities, plans for reopening have been mixed amid shifting case counts. In Chicago, city officials have relaxed restrictions on restaurants, churches, bars, and other indoor gatherings. In Anaheim, California, Disneyland reopened on Friday. But in Seattle's King County, where restaurants and other businesses are still under orders to have a maximum capacity of 50%, state leaders are considering a plan to restore more restrictions on Tuesday amid a rise in coronavirus cases and hospitalizations. Businesses in New York will still have to abide by federal social distancing guidelines, which recommend a minimum of 6 feet of space between groups. Our next headline from the New York Times, widespread community shortages raise inflation fears. The subhead, for products as diverse as lumber and microchips, price increases are filtering through the economy. This article is by Alan Rappaport and Thomas Kaplan. In a normal year, Ron Whalen, vice president of Roger B. Kennedy Construction, receives one or two dear valued customer letters from suppliers notifying him of price increases for certain materials. This year, a stack of 30 such warnings sits on his desk in Orlando, Florida, alerting him that things as diverse as lumber, drywall, aluminum, and steel are going to cost 10% to 20% more. The notices are the result of commodity shortages that are rippling across the United States economy as growing demand for housing, cars, electronics, and other goods runs up against supply chain congestion and high tariffs left behind by former President Donald J. Trump. The shortages and the price increases they are eliciting are being watched closely by the Biden administration, which is under increasing pressure from industry groups and businesses to take steps to ease them. Automakers want the White House to help them get the semiconductors they need to make cars, while the housing industry is asking for tariff relief. Pressure to intervene could intensify as the administration pushes for a multi-trillion-dollar infrastructure investment package that includes money for building roads, bridges, and electric vehicle charging stations, all of which could become increasingly expensive if prices keep rising. Quote, "We keep waiting for things to settle down and get back to normal, but they haven't," unquote, Mr. Whalen said. He has considered using another material, such as metal stud systems rather than wood framing, for some construction projects because the price of lumber has almost tripled in the past year. Economists and policymakers are carefully tracking the shortages as they hunt for signs of inflation, and companies are increasingly worried that the price spikes may not be temporary. The Federal Reserve's latest Beige Book survey found that businesses were citing, quote, COVID-related disruptions in production and supply chain logistics, unquote, as reasons for shortages and price spikes of commodities such as agricultural products, building materials, cleaning products, and microchips. For now, the Fed is not overly concerned about the price increases, viewing them as temporary and not the type of inflation that could spiral out of control. The Fed Chair, Jerome H. Powell, said last week that officials expected to see short-lived price spikes as the economy reopened and consumers started spending again. In another reversal, Biden raises limit on number of refugees allowed into the U.S. That's the next headline from the New York Times, with a subheadline of, "The action comes about 2 weeks after President Biden announced that he was leaving the Trump administration's limit of 15,000 refugees in place, prompting a swift backlash." This article is by Michael D. Shear and Zolan Cano Youngs. It is datelined Washington. President Biden on Monday reversed himself and said that he would allow as many as 62,500 refugees to enter the United States during the next 6 months, eliminating the sharp limits that President Donald J. Trump imposed on those seeking refuge from war, violence, or natural disasters. The action comes about 2 weeks after Mr. Biden announced that he was leaving Mr. Trump's limit of 15,000 refugees in place, which drew widespread condemnation from Democrats and refugee advocates who accused the president of reneging on a campaign promise to welcome those in need. Mr. Biden quickly backtracked, promising only hours later that he intended to increase refugee admissions. With Monday's announcement, the president formally bowed to the pressure. Quote, "This erases the historically low number set by the previous administration of 15,000, which did not reflect America's values as a nation that welcomes and supports refugees," unquote, Mr. Biden said in a statement issued by the White House. And now on to world and national news as reported by the Hartford Current. And on the front page, the lead story runs under the headline, "Climate Policy Enacted by EPA." The subhead, "Agency's Proposal is First Attempt to Limit Potent Greenhouse Gases." This is by Lisa Friedman of the New York Times. It is datelined Washington. The Environmental Protection Agency on Monday moved to sharply cut down on the use and production of powerful greenhouse gases used in refrigeration and air conditioning, part of the Biden administration's larger strategy of trying to slow the pace of global warming. The first significant step taken by the EPA under President Joe Biden to curb climate change, the proposed regulation focuses on hydrofluorocarbons, a class of human-made chemicals that is thousands of times more potent than carbon dioxide at warming the planet. Michael Regan, the EPA administrator, said the agency aimed to reduce the production and importation of hydrofluorocarbons in the United States by 85% over the next 15 years. Quote, "This action is good for our planet and our economy," unquote, Regan said in a statement. He framed the move as good for U.S. businesses, saying it would, quote, "help promote American leadership in innovation and manufacturing of new climate-safe products," unquote. The move is important because it will be the first time the federal government has set national limits on HFCs, which were used to replace ozone-depleting chlorofluorocarbons in the 1980s, but have turned out to be a significant driver of global warming. More than a dozen states have either banned HFCs or are formulating some restrictions. The EPA's action is backed by both environmental groups and the business community, which jointly championed bipartisan legislation passed by Congress in December to tackle HFCs. But the speed with which the EPA crafted language and moved forward with the proposed regulation is unusual and underscores the urgency that the Biden administration is placing on climate change, said Francis Dietz, Vice President for Public Affairs at the Air Conditioning, Heating, and Refrigeration Institute, a trade group. Quote, they're really moving swiftly, unquote, he said. Quoting again, it says they're very serious about this, unquote. Next, from the World and Nation pages of the Hartford Current, herd immunity unlikely, experts say. The subhead, Shift in U.S. Outlook Offers New Challenge Against COVID-19. This by Apoorva Mandavilli of the New York Times. Early in the pandemic, when vaccines for the coronavirus were still just a glimmer on the horizon, the term herd immunity came to signify the end game. The point when enough Americans would be protected from the virus so we could be rid of the pathogen and reclaim our lives. Now, more than half of adults in the country have been inoculated with at least one dose of the vaccine, but daily vaccination rates are slipping, and there is widespread consensus among scientists and public health experts that the herd immunity threshold is not attainable, at least not in the foreseeable future and perhaps not ever. Instead, they're coming to the conclusion that rather than making a long-promised exit, the virus will most likely become a manageable threat that will continue to circulate in the United States for years to come, still causing hospitalizations and deaths, but in much smaller numbers. How much smaller is uncertain and depends in part on how much of the nation and the world becomes vaccinated and how the coronavirus evolves. It is clear, however, that the virus is changing too quickly. New variants are spreading too easily, and vaccination is proceeding too slowly for herd immunity to be within reach anytime soon. Continued immunizations, especially for people at highest risk because of age, exposure, or health status, will be crucial to limiting the severity of outbreaks, if not their frequency, experts believe. Quote, this virus is unlikely to go away, unquote, said Rustam Antia, an evolutionary biologist at Emory University in Atlanta. Quoting again, but we want to do all we can to check that it's likely to become a mild infection, unquote. The shift in outlook presents a new challenge for public health authorities. The drive for herd immunity, by the summer, some experts once thought possible, captured the imagination of large segments of the public. To say the goal will not be attained adds another why bother to the list of reasons that vaccine skeptics use to avoid being inoculated. Yet vaccinations remain the key to transforming the virus into a controllable threat, experts said. The next headline, migrants separated from kids to be reunited in U.S. Four parents will join children this week, DHS secretary says. This by Miriam Jordan of the New York Times. Four parents from Mexico and Central America who were among thousands of migrants deported without their children under the Trump administration's controversial family separation policy will be allowed to join their children in the United States this week, U.S. officials said. The parents, who are from Honduras, Guatemala, and Mexico, will be the first families to reunite in the United States since the Biden administration began taking steps to unravel the 2018 policy that attempted to deter families from trying to enter the country by separating children and parents.